just explain about so many different types of sacrifices. And the conclusion of Krishna's explanation is that all these different sacrifices are born of an individual's nature. In other words, a person will be attracted to engage in one sacrifice or another according to his own tendencies, his own karma. And that these sacrifices are not equal. Some of them are done with knowledge and some of them are done without knowledge. Knowledge means many things. It means knowledge about, deep knowledge about Krishna. It means knowledge that we are not the body. It means knowledge of the goal being transcendental. So the more one has transcendental knowledge, and the more one is acting or doing the sacrifice in transcendental knowledge, then the more advanced the sacrifice is said to be. Because the result of the lower forms of sacrifice are specifically transcendental knowledge. And then one gradually is sacrificed. The jagat becomes more elevating as one increases his transcendental knowledge. And just before that, Krishna has explained how to do work as a sacrifice. Detached and giving everything to Krishna. Then one's work is actually situated on the transcendental platform. And in that sense, or in that way, karma is fully jnana, or fully based on knowledge. Based on knowledge that we're not our body, based on knowledge that we are Krishna's part and parcel, based on knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and we are meant to serve Him. These are different knowledges that sacrifices will be based on. Now, Krishna is going to explain how, or many things will be explained in the final section, but the first topic is how to get that knowledge. Now, where has this topic, how to get knowledge, where has that been previously explained? What chapter? Our Acharya Ratna. Yes, everything is explained in the second chapter. But what chapter? More recent. And I'll give you a hint. It's not the third chapter. Okay, what's your name? What chapter? Fourth chapter, right. And where? What part of the fourth chapter? Yes, that one must hear this knowledge in disciplic succession, and exactly to the point. How to get that knowledge is described in text 34. This is one of the verses I believe that we are responsible for. Yes? Tadbidhi paripatena pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshan. So tat, Prabhupada has translated it as it means that. But what is it referring to? That it means that knowledge of different types of sacrifices. That knowledge about the order of sacrifices, that transcendental knowledge. Vidhi, understand this. And what's the process of understanding? Pranipatena. By approaching a spiritual master. And how to approach him? Pariprasnena. Prajna means questions. So pariprasna means by submissive inquiries. So this is how we approach the spiritual master. As Prabhupada explains in the purport, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. One should ask questions to make sure that he clearly understands the knowledge. And one should ask questions about how one should make advancement. That's paripasnena sevaya. And not only ask questions, but render service. And upadek shanti te gyanam. Such spiritual masters, self-realized souls, will give you knowledge. He will reveal that knowledge to you. Why? Gyaninas tattva darshati. That such self-realized souls, they are seers of the truth. They understand things in the right perspective. So as Prabhupada has translated the verse, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Now, after one approaches, and as Dhanadhamaraj explained in his Bhagavatam class today, the first principle that Rupa Goswami has described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion is Guru Padasrai. That one must take shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And then after that, everything will follow. Then, after one takes shelter of the spiritual master, what is the transcendental knowledge that he will realize is explained in the next sloka. This is also an important sloka. Yaj vyadva napuna moham evam yashasi pandava yena bhutana sheshani drakshasyatma yatomayi. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never again fall into such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or, in other words, that they are mine. So, one will understand once one has knowledge that the living entities, regardless of whether they are in bird bodies, or whether they are in cat bodies, or mouse bodies, or cricket bodies, or human bodies, or demigod bodies, regardless of the particular body the living entity is within, he is not his body. This is knowledge. And not only that, that the living entities are not their bodies, but also one will understand that the living entities are within Krishna. We are part of Krishna. The living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. And once one understands this, by taking to the process of approaching a spiritual master, rendering service to him, and questioning him, then one understanding this in truth, he will never again fall into illusion. Never, never again he will fall into illusion. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an existence separate from Krishna is called Maya. Ma, not, am, ya, this. So this is what Maya does. Just as the finger is connected to the body, but the finger can be cut from the body, but the soul is eternally connected to Krishna, but it can never, never, never be separated from Krishna. But in illusion, in Maya, thinking something is not something that is, in other words, that we have a connection with Krishna, we think ourselves separate from Krishna. So one in illusion, in Maya, is not seeing things as they are. They are seeing things as they are not. So therefore, Maya. And what is that are not? We see ourselves as separate, different from Krishna. The concept of I and mine are there in the soul. But instead of thinking I am Krishna's, and Krishna's mind, we think I am my body, and everything that I see, everything I can get my hands on, everything I can squeeze, it is mine. It is meant for my pleasure. So that is the maya or the illusion of the living entity. He does not see things as it is. And this is specifically the function of maya. To give us the illusion that we are separate from Krishna. And therefore that is the nature or the mood of every conditioned soul within the material world, trying to enjoy himself independently of Krishna. And when we have hundreds and thousands of souls trying to enjoy themselves independently of Krishna, we have simply chaos. And that is the situation in the material world. Continuing in the next paragraph. For want of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion. And therefore, we think that we are separated from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless not different from Him. The bodily separated parts, meaning individuals. We are individuals. So sometimes the question asked me, someone asked me recently, what is the meaning of what we say, we are parts and parcels of Krishna. What is the meaning of that? So we are part of Krishna. That is clear, but what is the meaning of parcel? So just like a part of Krishna would be like the stream coming from the river, it is part of the river. That water is part of the river. But it is not parcel. A parcel means an individual unit. So not only are we part of Krishna, not only are we coming from Krishna, but in addition we are parcels, we are individual units, eternally. So that is the meaning of part and parcel, and that is knowledge, understanding this. That our relationship with Krishna is eternal, it can never be broken. Jivera Srupoi Krishnaira Nityadas. Nityadas. We are eternally Krishna's servant. This is the Sarup, the natural position of the living entity. So the whole teachings of the Gita is targeted towards this end, understanding that a living being is Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna. And his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called maya. The living entities, as separate parts and parcels of the Supreme, have a purpose to fulfill. Having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies as men, animals, demigods, etc. Such a bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master, and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul Krishna is the supreme shelter for all living entities. And giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy. The nature of the living entity is marginal. There are three Shaktis of the Lord. There is the Chit Shakti, which is the internal energy. Then there is the Maya Shakti, or the external energy. And then there is the Jiva Shakti, or Tatastha Shakti, which is marginal. The nature of this marginal energy, Tatastha Shakti, is that it must take shelter. It must take shelter. So when the living entity doesn't take shelter of the internal energy of Krishna and thinks himself independent, it is not that he actually becomes independent. That is not within his capacity. Because we are tatastha. So what happens is when we don't take shelter of Krishna, we take shelter of maya. And the process of Krishna consciousness is the process of changing our shelter from the external energy to the internal energy. And getting shelter of the internal energy is the goal of Krishna consciousness. This is what we want to do. We want to gain the shelter the secure eternal shelter of the internal energy, becoming one with Krishna. Kutosto chara uchite, becoming one with Krishna in desire. And then we will get shelter when we show ourselves no longer wanting shelter of the external energy. What does shelter of the external energy mean practically? What does it mean? What does it mean to take shelter of the external energy?
Suffering.
Okay, that's the result. But what is it, what is the mood of the living entity? What? What? Sergio?
The tendency to take shelter of the external energy.
What does that mean?
Maya.
Maba. Yes, that's one symptom. Another symptom? Manjari? He wants the independent? Manjari. He wants to enjoy himself. Yeah. Envious of Krishna.
I
and mine. He's thinking, I am the body, I'm exploiting. Yes. He's thinking, I am the enjoyer. Completely. He has a whole illusion bubble set up because he doesn't want to be engaged in reality with Krishna as the center. So he sets up a whole illusory universe composed of him and his Maya illusion. And in this, he is the center. And he is the enjoyer. And he is the controller. And this is how every conditioned soul is thinking, that everything is here for me and my pleasure. And I will try to control this, and I will try to control that, and manipulate things so I can become happy. So everyone is in this, their own bubble or of illusion just like this. So it's no wonder that people are always fighting with each other, because the bubbles are bumping. Because in my illusion, Samukha is just one piece. In my Maya, my whole illusory universe, Samukha is one piece, and his purpose, the purpose of his existence, is somehow or another to give me pleasure. And you're all just little, you have, like in a drama, there's the main star, the hero, and then there are all the bit parts, you know, the little minor characters. So in my drama, I am the hero. And you are all just minor parts in my drama, and your parts are always just to make me happy. But the only trouble is, in Samukha's drama, I am just a little part, and my business is to make him happy, like that, and your business is to make him. And therefore, there's never any communication, really, between people, because it's just illusion. Because everyone has this illusion that everyone else's business is to make them happy. And this is why the material world is so hellish. And then we're dreaming that we are big, that we are important, that we are powerful. And meanwhile, we're getting smashed and beaten down by the illusory energy, and we're getting old, and we're getting attacked by disease. And we're dreaming that we are important, that we are powerful. And we're getting smashed. So the illusion has to grow more and more crazy, continuously. So such bodily differences, and all this illusion arises from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service to Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. Because he is saying that he is servant, Krishna's servant. I am not the center. Divera surupoi, Krishna nitya das. This is me. I am just Krishna's servant. And I want to serve him. In whatever little insignificant way I am able, just Krishna, please let me serve you. I am so sick of the illusion. I have seen for myself. And I've seen all the others in this world just simply in illusion and suffering. I don't want this anymore. Krishna, please. I will take a bit part in your drama. Just let engage me in your leela. Just somehow let me be part And that is reality, actually. That is reality. Just to be a part of Krishna's servant. So as soon as one accepts his transcendental service, one is immediately liberated and free from illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master. If you go to someone other than someone in Guru Parampara, then you will get some other knowledge. And another knowledge is illusion. You will find out, you go to some, you go to one person and accept him as an authority, and you will find out that you are an American or a Portuguese. Yeah, Portuguese? Because there are many Portuguese. So that's so many Portuguese. And if it's one, it's a Portuguese.
I think.
Portuguese. Yeah, okay. And if you go to, depending on, everyone has their own idea of what is knowledge, but it is only illusion. Krishna will explain this in the 13th chapter. Anything other than this knowledge of the soul, the super soul, and the body is illusion, he will explain. Chetra, chetra, gya. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter for all living entities. In giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. Thus, under different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that they are on the path of liberation. So, we have heard 34 was what? What did text 34 explain? Raise your hand. Yes, Chaitanya Chaitanya. Yes, how to get knowledge. And 35?
What that knowledge is.
What that knowledge is. And then there will be several verses as to what the fruit or the result of having that knowledge is. So here is the first one. Apichedasi papebhya. Now apiched means even if you are a great, great sinner, even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. Because we are situated, our miseries and our material desires are simply sinful reactions. Different stages of sinful reactions. All material desire, especially sex desire, is sinful reaction. So if one becomes situated in transcendental knowledge, his consciousness becomes fixed in transcendental knowledge, that transcendental knowledge is like a boat that will carry one across the ocean of material life and material misery. How powerful this transcendental knowledge is. How glorious it is. So this verse shows that even if someone is the greatest of sinners, even though it is not really possible for someone who is a sinner to have transcendental knowledge, because transcendental knowledge comes from goodness. But even if one was a sinner, a great sinner, if he becomes somehow situated in transcendental knowledge, then he's no longer a sinner. Because this knowledge is like a boat that will have him ride the waves of his material existence. And then, in the next text, another fruit or result of transcendental knowledge. Another example. So we heard, and the last one was the example of transcendental knowledge compared to a boat. And herein, transcendental knowledge is compared to a fire. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. So we can imagine if a fire is lit on the grass roof of a house, how quickly it would be burnt to ashes. So similarly, so quickly are the pap and punya, the pious and impious reactions to good and bad deeds that we have performed in the past. They are burnt by transcendental knowledge. There are four different stages of sinful reaction, and one by one they are burnt up. There is aparabdha, which means the past seeds or past reactions that one has accumulated for billions and billions and billions of births. That is aparabdha, or unmanifest. They are lying like a stock of seeds. And then the next stage of manifestation is vashan, or kuta, which means tendencies, that it's just beginning to manifest. Just something in the personality wants to do something sinful or pious. And then after that, there is bija, when it is real, the manifest strong desire. And then finally, there is parabdha, which we actually, the reactions that we are actually suffering for and enjoying at this very moment. This material body is parabdha karma. Now, one by one, beginning with aparabdha, the stock, these are destroyed. And transcendental knowledge is so powerful that it can destroy all the aparabdha karma. It can destroy all the kuta and bija, but it cannot touch the parabdha karma, what we have right now. And that is compared to, Prabhupada would sometimes compare it to the fan. So parabdha karma is, and kuta bija is like all the electricity pouring into the fan. And the fan is what we have, the actual spinning of the fan is our situation right now with this body, with its particular tendencies and karma attached to it. But when we turn the electricity off, that is like removing all the aparabdha, kuta bija. Everything that is giving power, and all that is left is the parabdha karma still spinning, but nothing is making it spin more. That is the material body that we have now. So when one gets transcendental knowledge, all that is left is the parabdha karma. The only thing that can even remove or touch parabdha karma is not knowledge, transcendental knowledge, but it is bhakti, devotion. So when one takes to devotion, he is not exactly even liable for his parabdha karma. But that parabdha karma is in the hands of Krishna. And the question is asked by the acharyas, why does Krishna leave the parabdha karma for a devotee? And the answer is so that they can preach. So this is the purpose of our material existence for preaching. Because if we had no more parabdha karma, what would happen to the body? Just immediately, there'd be nothing left. We'd fall down dead. So this is actually the purpose for a devotee being in the material world and having this body. It is for preaching. The acharyas have explained like this. So this is so powerful, as a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities, and that's both pap and punya. Now more on this. In this world, more glorification of transcendental knowledge. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. Because in the last section, we heard of so many mystical processes of sacrifices and austerities, offering the outgoing breath into the incoming, controlling the different types of airs, doing this, controlling the eating process, doing this, doing that. These are all different sacrifices. These are all different mystical processes. These are all valid. They are all approved by the Vedas. But the fruit, the ultimate fruit of all these different sacrifices and mystical processes and austerities is to come to the platform of transcendental knowledge. So such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service or yoga or Nishkam Karma enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So one has to practice this process. One has to work, Krishna is telling Arjuna. And it will come. One will get this knowledge not by taking sannyas, not by giving up work, but by working in the right consciousness. This is more purifying, working, doing one's duty in the right consciousness as a ultimately as a devotional offering to Krishna, is more purifying than all austerities. It's more purifying than going to so many different places of pilgrimage. And one will get that knowledge. Because, again, this is one of Arjuna's big questions. Should I fight or should I not fight? And if I don't fight, I will go to the forest and I will give up all work. And that way, what will I do? I will practice yoga and get transcendental knowledge and become advanced. But Krishna is saying, no, you won't become advanced. He's answered this question so many times, actually. The way to get transcendental knowledge and become advanced is to work, but in the right consciousness. It's Nishkam Karma. Ultimately, you should work because I'm asking you to work. And in full surrender, devotional surrender. Text 39. So this is what the result of following on the path of work, as Krishna is telling Arjuna to do, to fight, is that he will become situated in knowledge. And Arjuna was thinking that if I work, I'm going to get so many sinful reactions. But Krishna is telling here that if you work, it's not that you will get sinful reactions, you will be freed from sinful reactions. You will get transcendental knowledge, which will burn every reaction to ashes. You will be situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge by doing your work dutifully, with no attachment to the result. You will be situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, and you will float over the ocean of Kurukshetra in the boat of transcendental knowledge. So this is the glory of transcendental knowledge. But what happens if someone doesn't have faith in this? Or what happens if someone does have faith in it first, and then second will be those who don't have faith? A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. In other words, he becomes liberated. So this is the first step in acquiring this knowledge, that one must have faith in transcendental knowledge. And that comes from faith in Guru, the one who is giving us the transcendental knowledge. So first we have faith, then we have faith in that knowledge, then we desire to follow it, then we become devoted to following it. And we control our senses and become fixed on that platform of transcendental knowledge. And the result of that is liberation or supreme spiritual peace. We have to have faith in this. Otherwise, will our progress will be ruined. We will not be dhyavya satmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana, but rather we will be bahu shakas tvanantascha. We will be many branched. Because our intelligence will not be able to stay fixed in transcendental knowledge. So Krishna is telling Arjuna to fight and have full faith in my words, as the Supreme Lord and as your spiritual master, you fight and understand for sure and have full faith that working in this detached way will bring you to the highest platform. Do not doubt this. Krishna is telling Arjuna in this verse. Shradaval labhate jnanam tatpara samatendriya. And then, who cannot attain this transcendental knowledge? If you don't have faith in this, what will happen to you? This is very interesting verse. Agyas chashradadanascha samsayatma vinashyati nayam lokos dinapara nasukam samsayatmana. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul there is happiness, neither in this world nor the next. So there are three different types of faithless people described here. The first is the agya. An agya is someone who is foolish. That's the first word in the verse. Agyas. Foolish like an animal. And such a person, he doesn't know anything about Shastra. So he gets a little happiness, but he doesn't get transcendental knowledge. That is the agya. The second one is Shraddhadanas. Agyascha Ashraddhadanas. That is someone who doesn't have faith in the revealed scriptures. He is Ashraddhadana. He has no faith in the revealed scriptures. This means that he reads many, many shastras and he says, well, this shastra says this, and this shastra says this, and this shastra says this, and this says this, and he doesn't have any faith in any of them. So such a person is another type of a faithless person. First person has no knowledge, so he can't have faith. This one has over-knowledge in one sense. He has knowledge of so many things, but yet he doesn't have faith. And the third person is the samsayatma. And the samsayatma means the one who doubts. So the doubter, he knows what will happen according to Shastra, but he doesn't believe he's really going to get that result. And the doubter is the worst. So therefore, for the doubter, for the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. So he cannot get any peace or happiness in this world because he's always doubting, and he will not get the result of transcendental knowledge or elevation because he cannot follow properly and he cannot his consciousness is not proper because he is samsayatmana. He is the doubter. So he is. These are the ones. In the previous verse, the qualification for getting liberation is described, is this Shraddhaval labhate jnanam tat para samatendriya. And here, the disqualification of faithlessness is described. And the worst is the doubter. And Prabhupada, the last line of the purport, one should therefore follow in the footsteps of great acharyas who are in the disciplic succession and thereby attain success. Text 41. So here are the symptoms of one in perfection. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruit of his actions, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus, he is not bound by the reactions of work or conquer of riches. Purport. One who follows the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, like Arjuna, should follow Krishna's instructions to work in that detached consciousness, giving everything fully focused on Krishna. One who follows the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, as it is imparted by the Lord, the personality of Godhead himself, becomes free from all doubts by the grace of transcendental knowledge. Because he's acting like that. So therefore the transcendental knowledge comes to him, because the result of this nishkam karma is transcendental knowledge. And what is that transcendental knowledge? He, as a part and parcel of the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, that he understands this, is already established in self-knowledge. As such, he is undoubtedly above bondage to action. That's the symptom of being fixed in this nishkam karma. And again, that knowledge is that one is Krishna's eternal servant, and our business is to do what he says, surrender to him with full devotion. And finally, the conclusion, because Arjuna, remember, is sitting on the chariot, his Gandiva bow has dropped from his hands, his mind is reeling, and Krishna is telling him, giving him so many instructions. And Krishna ends this chapter by telling Arjuna, therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, nishkam karma yoga, O Bharata, stand, because he's sitting, and fight. Purport. The yoga system instructed in this chapter is called Sanatana Yoga, or eternal activities performed by the living entity. This yoga has two divisions of sacrificial actions. One is called sacrifice of one's material possessions, and the other is called knowledge of the self, which is pure spiritual activity. If sacrifice of one's material possessions is not dovetailed for spiritual realization, then such sacrifice becomes material. But one who performs such sacrifices with a spiritual objective or in devotional service makes a perfect sacrifice. When we come to spiritual activities, we find that these are also divided into two, namely, understanding of one's own self or one's constitutional position and the truth regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who follows the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is can very easily understand these two important divisions of spiritual knowledge. For him, there is no difficulty in obtaining perfect knowledge of the self as part and parcel of the Lord. And such understanding is beneficial, for such a person can easily understand the transcendental activities of the Lord. In the beginning of this chapter, the transcendental activities of the Lord were discussed by the Supreme Lord himself. One who does not understand the instructions of the Gita is faithless and is to be considered to be misusing the fragmental independence awarded to him by the Lord. In spite of such instructions, one who does not understand the real nature of the Lord as the eternal, blissful, all-knowing personality of Godhead is certainly a fool number one. Ignorance can be removed by gradual acceptance of the principles of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is awakened by different types of sacrifices to the demigods, sacrifices to Brahman, sacrifices in celibacy and household life and controlling the senses and practicing mystic yoga and penance and foregoing material possessions and studying the Vedas and in partaking of the social institution called Vanashrama Dharma. All of these are known as sacrifice and all of them are based on regulated action. But within all these activities, the important factor is self-realization. One who seeks that objective is the real student of Bhagavad Gita. But one who doubts the authority of Krishna falls back. One is therefore advised to study Bhagavad Gita or any other scripture under a bona fide spiritual master with service and surrender. So Prabhupada is giving a summary of the entire chapter here. A bona fide spiritual master is in the disciplic succession from time eternal, and he does not deviate at all from the instructions of the Supreme Lord as they were imparted millions of years ago to the sun god, from whom the instructions of Bhagavad Gita have come down to the earthly kingdom. One should therefore follow the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is expressed in the Gita itself, and beware of self-interested people with personal aggrandizement after personal aggrandizement who deviate others from the actual path. The Lord is definitely the Supreme Person, and his activities are transcendental. One who understands this is a liberated person from the very beginning of his study of Bhagavad Gita. So in the beginning of this purport, it's described these different levels of activities. One may perform a sacrifice as a karmakanda sacrifice. One is pouring so much ghee on the fire but the result will only be material. Even if one is sacrificing his material possessions, if one doesn't sacrifice, as Prabhupada explains here, if sacrifice of one's material possessions is not dovetail for spiritual realization, then such sacrifice is material. But as soon as that sacrifice of material possessions becomes offered to Krishna to gain spiritual realization, then the result will be spiritual. So that is the difference between karmakanda and sakkam karma yoga. And then when one's transcendental knowledge increases, and transcendental knowledge is of two parts, knowledge of who we are and knowledge of who Krishna is and our relationship. So as the knowledge increases, one becomes detached, and in this way, one surrenders more, one becomes in the mode of goodness, one develops devotion, and then gradually one attains perfection. Any questions or comments?
In the yoga letter, we learned that by karma kanda and performance of sacrifice, one elevates oneself in knowledge. And I understood so far that at one point one approaches the spiritual master by understanding I'm not the body or I'm the self. But in the translation, it seems even to understand the yoga, the different types of yoga, Prabhupada says in verse 34, one should approach the spiritual master.
Yeah, if one to do a sacrifice, one has to take initiation in the sacrifice. So to do even a material sacrifice, one has to do that. But the point that Prabhupada is making is that if to actually understand the actual purpose of sacrifice, one has to approach with faith a bona fide spiritual master in discipline succession. Otherwise, one will get the wrong understanding. The perspective will be wrong. Of course, you must approach the Brahmins. The Brahmins are the spiritual master. Without the Brahmins, the sacrifice can't go on. But when we're talking about attaining transcendental knowledge, one has to approach a different type of spiritual master. One in this discipline succession. Yeah.
You mentioned, you said that the living entity is part of the parcel of Krishna. The parcel aspect is the individual unit. It's, you know, is one, but he's different also. And you said, Jujara Swarup, you know, like that, but the Swarup is to be.
It's never linked to us.
So the question is,
it's not really Krishna, sir.
Earlier, I asked somebody about like the soul, like that one verse 212 mentions like the soul never won't, you know, always gets resisted in the past and will in the future. And then Prabhupada says that kind of defeats the mind on the idea that the soul can be extinguished in his realm. So it's still hard for me to understand that point.
What point?
That the soul, which was said earlier to, you know, always exists in the past, the present, and the future.
He's existing. You mean you're talking about in Brahman?
Mm-hmm.
You want to go?
No.
You hope what? That you don't want to go?
Yeah.
You just don't want to go, and then you don't have to hope.
I thought it wasn't possible to go through individuality.
Actually, yes. But one can lose his consciousness of his individuality. And that's what happens. And then if you have no consciousness of your individuality, it's very hard to get it back. You get it back practically because you're not conscious of it.
What are you then conscious of?
Just existence. Totality of existence. Sat.
But that's still duality.
But no, because it's not that your consciousness of your existence. Because then there will be duality between you and existence. There's no sense of you. You just exist. But you can't be described.
Okay.
So therefore we, yeah, because it can't be described, that's our, when we're dealing with Mayavadis, we tell them to be quiet. Because it can't be described. As soon as they say anything, they create duality, and therefore they defeat their own philosophy. Because as soon as you say, you have no sense of your existence, there's the concept of existence and then non-existence, or individuality, and there's already duality. So it's off the Brahman platform.
Yeah. In relation to text
37.
He said, if I heard properly, that all different reactions to sinful activities
and
are
pious.
Impious activities.
Pious and sinful.
Pious and sinful are burned out, except for perhaps the karma, those we are suffering or enjoying now.
That through transcendental knowledge, through devotion, that is changed.
Yeah, and yet Prabhupada here in the purport, it seems to, if I understand correctly, it seems to say that all reactions are consumed if one is in complete knowledge. Is it the difference in between this complete knowledge or just transcendental knowledge? Complete knowledge is already being engaged in bhakti.
Yeah, I would say that.
Because is this transcendental knowledge is anga bhakti, or is the one we should not even
Knowledge means knowing. But then, when one acts on the knowledge, when one has full knowledge, see, one could say transcendental knowledge is knowing that you're not your body. So that will free you from so many sinful reactions when you realize that.
But if I don't attain bhakti, it means that I fall back.
Yeah, you will fall back.
And
without bhakti, you cannot get liberation.
In a verse 35, in text 35,
yeah,
having obtained real knowledge from the selfless soul, you will never fall again into such illusion.
That means once you are out of illusion, you will never go back in illusion. Once you are liberated, you will never be unliberated.
That already came back in that stage.
Yeah, once you actually attain bhakti, there is no falling down. You will go to that place. This is in the 8th chapter, this is described also. You will never again come down. Naiti mameti.
Two quick questions. And the first one is, you're talking about liberation a lot. So which liberation are we talking about? This whole chapter you mentioned so many times.
But there's different types of liberation. See, Krishna is speaking on different levels. If you're practicing nishkam karma, just detachment, with the desire for jnana or impersonal liberation, you will get that kind of liberation. But if you're practicing it to get Krishna, after liberation, you will get Krishna. So that's why... See, that's what Krishna does here. He speaks on different levels. And depending upon what you want and what your consciousness is, you will get that result. But this is the process to get all kinds of liberations, this nishkam karma. But depending upon your consciousness, you will get one kind or another.
Means you come to the stage of Brahma-bhuta by this...
Not if you're... Process, you go through it by... If you go through it, you don't come to the stage of Brahma-bhuta exactly for a devotee, but you go through it. You don't have to pass through it unless you are taking the yoga ladder step by step. Second question.
Sometimes you're talking about Tadvidhi Panipapilu, that verse, and how inquiry is so important. Sometimes, I've often heard actually devotees say, but Prabhupada said, the only question I ever ask my spiritual master is, how can I serve you? So therefore they have told sometimes the second devotees not to ask too many questions. So is that the highest level to just...
Yeah, if you have no more, if you're, or if that is your heart, that all you want to do is service, you're a pure devotee already, then you don't, there's no need to ask any questions about the process. but that's not usually our case. We should ask questions how to advance about Krishna. We should ask. It shows a desire to advance when we ask. When we don't ask, it means that we don't have desire to advance.
So to be completely liberated, just like there's this verse, Giha Yasha Hare Yasha. So but you still have your corrupted karma, you still have your body. That's not contradictory.
To be completely liberated.
Yeah, because it says you can also be saved with pure devotee.
So he is transcendental to that. He knows he's not his body, and the prabhu karma is acting, and he's watching it happen.
So that's how it is. He's just not identifying it.
But for a devotee, he doesn't even have to get his prabhu karma.
But he has a body.
Right, he has a body, but he's not liable to get his prabhu karma. It's under Krishna's hands. Krishna can change it, minimize it, take everything away when he should have been a millionaire. It's up to Krishna when he's a devotee. He's in the hands of Krishna. So how secure a devotee feels. No, the topmost liberation being situated in Goloka Vrindavan. And there's also other kinds of liberations. There's Samipya, Shashti, Sarupya Salokya, and Sayujya. Those are considered the five basic kinds of liberations. And one can attain those liberations in different moods as well. One can be liberated attaining mostly opulence, desiring opulence even. And that the devotee doesn't even look twice at that in that mood. But the devotee's interest is service. He's not interested in liberation, although he gets the highest kind of liberation. Liberation means freedom from the modes of material nature, basically. No, they want service, but by getting service, they're liberated because they're serving Krishna. They're not under the control of the modes of material nature. They're under the internal energy, not the external energy. The devotees want service, and liberation follows them. They get it automatically, but it's not their desire. They want service. Janmani janmani shpare bhavatat bhakti ahaiti kitai. Mahaprabhu prays that, I'm not interested in liberation, I just want your service, birth after birth after birth. So a devotee who has that mood, he is liberated. Because he's serving Krishna, but eternally. He doesn't want anything except service. So that is the actual meaning of Prabhupada's comment. That the only question I asked was how to serve you.
Huh?
I don't remember either. Without faith, how will it become fixed? He will tell you something and you'll doubt it. So how will it become fixed in the heart? He'll tell you that Krishna is blue and plays his flute, and you'll, without faith, you'll say, do I really believe that? How is that possible? That just by chanting I'll be able to go back to Godhead? Just by performing nishkam karma? If I just give up the fruit of my work to Krishna, I'll get knowledge? How is that possible? So without faith, the knowledge doesn't get fixed in the heart. Follow?
Yes, but it seems like some devotees, just by reading Prabhupada, came to the movement, and they weren't actually saying, you know, I have faith in the Lord.
Saying it is one thing, having it is another. In other words, the potency, huh? Why is that? Then why would they have come if it wasn't an active principle? Because they had faith in the words. The words touched their heart. Otherwise, why would they have come to the movement? By reading the book. Last question.
For a conditioned soul who acts at the body is for the sin. The load of the sinful reaction goes into the stock of uninvested desire.
Yeah. It goes into the account. But it may be just like you murder somebody and it goes into the account. But it may very quickly fructify when they put you in jail and hang you. It's not that they come up the first one you got. How it exactly works, when we get which karma, that's impossible to understand. Very complicated. Therefore, because karma is so complicated, it is recommended that we get free from it immediately and not take any chances. Okay, thank you. All good.